Hello everyone and welcome to Employability Radio. My name is Maurice Newman. The Employability Service works under contract to the Department of Social Protection. Employability is an employment and recruitment service that's there to help people with disability to secure and maintain jobs in the open labour market. In order to do this work, Employability needs to work in partnership with a wide range of government welfare agencies, voluntary service providers, charities, and employers across the whole of Ireland. In this short series of programmes, we meet representatives of some of those agencies and discuss the issues facing people with disabilities in today's labour market. Hello everyone, and in this week's show I'm going to be talking to two representatives from the INOU, that's the Irish National Organisation for the Unemployed. We have with us John Farrell, the Membership and Development Worker, and Robert Lynch, who's the Manager of the Welfare Rights Information Service. All right guys, thanks for coming in, nice of you to make it along. I'm going to talk to John first. Before I do, I'm just going to tell our listeners that the Employability Service links in pretty regularly with the INOU, and your organisation provides us with a lot of information that really helps our clients. It gives them information on courses, education courses, vocational courses and training services that are available. And the INOU has been around quite a long while, I understand. Could you tell us a little bit about the organisation?
Great. Thanks very much, Maurice, and we're delighted for the invite as well. Very, very much appreciate being asked to come along. And as you said, just as I said, the links with Employability Dublin North and indeed Employability Services are something we really appreciate ourselves, people coming along to the different range of events that we've run. And of course, they're online now since COVID as well, and training and a whole range of different INOU events and training courses and that we're really, really grateful for that involvement. And thanks again for the invite today. And so in terms of the organisation, you're right, we're in existence since 1987. So we're around for quite a while. And I suppose the core aspects of the INOU, the Organisation of the Unemployed, is that it's, I suppose, it's unemployed people's own organisation. It's a representative organisation of unemployed people. And I suppose the key aspects of that is, if you look at what the organisation is about, it's to seek to represent the interests and views of unemployed people and their dependents. And then there's sort of two aims. There's a number of other ones, but we can boil it down to two that nearly all our work relates to. One of those is to ensure that people have an adequate level of income when they're out of work, and that's really important. And the second is that people have an opportunity to get decent paid work within a reasonable period of time. So they're the sort of the work that we do then relates to that, follows on from that, and a whole range of different sort of services, and we'll talk a little bit about those later as well, and training.
Could I just ask, are the people that come to you, do they get involved in the organisation as well as just appearing as customers or clients? So they actually become involved in the running or the organisation or...
Absolutely, Maurice. I mean, it's key, actually, the organisation. So we have a number of different aspects in which unemployed members and unemployed people play a vital role in the organisation. One of those is what we call the general branch of individual members. So our individual members are our unemployed members in the organisation. And when people are involved in the organisation, they become part of the general branch of individual members. And they're very, very heavily represented on the board of management. I think currently there's three or four members on the board. They significantly influence the work of the organisation through the meetings and contacts with ourselves. It's a very, very important element in the organisation. And I suppose it's that aspect about being the organisation of the unemployed that's very, very key. So, no, absolutely, Maurice.
I know that you're based in the North Inner City there. Which street is it? I forget the name of the street.
North Richmond Street.
North Richmond
Street, we're based
which
in...
Which is very central. Do you have offices all over the country?
We just have one office, which is the one there, but we're a federal organisation of a member-based organisation. So in addition to the hundreds of individual members, we'd also have a couple of hundred organisations that would be in membership with the INOU, but would be independent organisations themselves, and they'd be right across the country.
OK, so anyone who's unemployed anywhere in the country can link in with you, essentially.
So. They can indeed, yeah. I mean, they can obviously link in directly with ourselves and, you know, become a member. They can attend the online meetings that we run, and then they can get more involved in the work of the organisation. They can contact our different services around, you know, if there's any maybe potential problems. And Robert will talk a little bit about the work of the information service. But if there's any difficulties that they have, the expert information officers are able to assist people with that. And in addition to that, Maurice, we have a book, I suppose, people might have come across it before, called Working for Work. That's in its 27th edition this year.
I am familiar with this book. It really is. It's like a little Bible that we have. Any query that you get, more or less, is covered, whether it's WSS, going back to work, grants. It's a fantastic reference piece. Yeah, I think all the job coaches in employability just use this every other day. It's just absolutely invaluable. So if anybody wants a copy of that, they should get on to Robert. We'll give out the contact numbers at the end of the show.
Absolutely. And the online version is there for people to download if they'd like as well. It's up on the website, and as I said, we'll give contact details for those. So in addition to sending out copies, we'd be delighted if people be able to access it as well. And just actually one aspect of that, Maurice, if people are in different areas of the country and they're wondering, you know, they can obviously always contact ourselves, phone or email, but they might be wondering, can I drop into a service where I'll find out that information? We list in the finding information chapter towards the back of Working for Work across the different counties, the different member-based organisations that will provide that welfare to work information support. So that just might be something that would be useful for people. And obviously people in this area can see that in terms of Dublin as well.
Well, just to give Robert a chance, he's been very quiet. He must be feeling a bit left out, mate. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I'm going to go and ask you specifically about the Welfare Rights Information Service. You kind of look after that, don't you?
Yes. So we have a Welfare Rights Information Office. It's staffed by myself and three other staff members. And our service provides a free, confidential, impartial welfare rights information service. So effectively what that means is when somebody contacts us, we don't need their name, we don't need their PPS number, we don't need their phone number. All we need is the information they're prepared to give us and any clarification that's necessary to ensure we have the full picture about the issue they're talking about, the details they're talking about, and we can give them information. We don't provide advice. Okay, part of our service is we provide information. We outline your options. We outline the things that you can do, the things that you can't do, based on the information you've given us. And based on that, we identify the various options so that you can then decide yourself which best suits you. As part of the service, we also see it's not just about giving out information. It's about providing the information and detail that people don't have, but they don't know about. It's the old adage, it's not about what the question you ask, it's about the question that you don't ask because you didn't know that you needed to ask it.
So, for example,
it's a case of, can I take up work while I'm in receipt of a job seeker's payment? The answer is yes, but there's a few buts attached to that. And that's where we engage with people and we ask them things like, do you have a spouse or partner? Are they working? Are you in local authority? Are you in HAP accommodation? Do you have a medical card? All of that information filters into the overall picture. So effectively, we don't necessarily start where you bring us into the conversation. We start a few steps back so that we have a better view of who you are, what the situation is, and also where you would like to go. So, for example, if you said to me, can I take up work? One of the questions we'd ask, what are your plans in the future? And if your answer was, well, I intend to go back to education in September, that could present a problem. So you need to be aware that doing this now could present you with a problem later on if you're trying to access something else. So we try to be as comprehensive as we can. We try to be as complete as we can. And it's only where people need to interact with us that we would ask for some contact information, some details, maybe copies of letters they've received. But apart from that, our priority is confidentiality and accuracy. And even within the organisation itself, we are a distinct unit. So that information is not shared or passed on within the organisation to John or even to the coordinator of the organisation. So we have effectively Chinese walls built in, so it doesn't go any further than the person you're dealing with or the information section.
So I can assume then that you're not going to give us any details now on air.
No.
Damn. Okay. Not to worry then, we'll leave out the juicy bits. But I will ask you about whether in the course of what you're doing there and you work would you act as an advocacy service for people as well? Yep. Would they be able to come to you with a problem and you perhaps step in and as a mediator
absolutely
between the person and the officialdom?
What we would do is we would assist people with the difficulties they'd have. So we would provide information, we'd provide support up to and including advocacy service, which would include seeking a review of a decision or assisting the person to compile an appeal to the Social Welfare Appeals Office and or attend the appeal hearing with them when the oral hearings are back open again. And that's totally free. So there's no charge, there's no cost involved. We do everything from helping them to write letters, to clarify information, to get a copy of their social welfare file from the department so they can actually see what information the department have about them, because it could be a very simple misunderstanding about some technical issue or some facts or some calculations. So a lot of the time, it's not necessarily a problem. It's an interpretation of the facts and the information.
Oh, well, that's fairly comprehensive and a valuable service. I mean, in a year, say, how many people would you get coming in with queries that have had difficulty?
Well, we mainly deal with people by telephone and by email. We don't have a public office. So in that sense, we don't actually have people calling into us.
Well,
how many clients
would you deal with in an average year?
In the thousands. I mean, you'd be talking probably in around the 7, in relation to queries and engagements, you're talking around 7,500 queries a year.
Wow.
And that would be from very simple ones to complex ones, which would be verging on advocacy and representation and engaging with the department at all levels in all situations. Something that might take 5 minutes or something that might take 12 months.
So you're open to an inquiry on any level,
absolutely,
really? Anyone
absolutely.
Anyone can call in and gauge the depth and the complexity of the problem that they're looking at. I'll just go back to John for a second then. You say the service was established in the 1980s, 87 was it?
87.
I don't know if you know offhand, but who would have come up with this idea that there is a need for a union for the unemployed and develop the idea and put down the foundations of the service as it is now?
You know, that's a really good question, Morris. But back in the 80s, again, it was a time of, you know, very significant unemployment, huge immigration. And I suppose it was a group of people, so unemployed people, community activists, people that have been involved in some maybe of the centres, community-based centres at the time, and some trade union officials as well, that felt that unemployment needed to be the key issue to be addressed and to sort of at the political stage. I think at the time there was a sense that unemployment was a very important issue, but a resignation politically that we couldn't really do too much about it.
Or even a lack of political will, perhaps.
Yeah, possibly. And even where that maybe political will was, even where it was, maybe was diluted by the sense that it was a small country. You know, I think, was it a minister at the time had mentioned that, you know, we're a small country, we couldn't expect to create employment for all of our people. People would have to immigrate and so on. So I suppose it was that determination that groups of activists and people that came together and unemployed people about that, you know, we don't have to accept that. It is possible to do something else and to create, you know, range of sort of different forums and, as you mentioned, a sort of a political will to address it. So that was the sort of the foundation of the organisation of the unemployed in 87.
So at this stage then, I mean, given that we accept that there was a political motivation, do you do any lobbying or active lobbying trying to get laws, rules and regulations changed or, well, improved upon or thrown out altogether?
No, we do indeed. I mean, a key part of the work of the organisation, I suppose, and I mentioned earlier about those two goals, so, you know, one around how can we make sure that, you know, there are enough jobs for people that, you know, are well paid, that people have opportunities to develop careers in, you know, and relates to sort of quality training and so on. So we lobby for that to ensure that those opportunities are there for people. So, you know, to do that, we obviously do things like, you know, submissions to politicians. We meet with government ministers, other politicians, meet with senior civil servants, build alliances with other organisations, other non-government organisations like ourselves, and that with a view to try and implement change. And again, as I say, for us around those two key areas, ensure that when people have a decent level of income when they're out of work, and that those opportunities to get good employment, quality training, build good careers are there for people as well. So our sort of lobbying, campaigning work revolves very much around those.
it's great that you're doing the lobbying and that somebody's doing it on the behalf of the unwaged and low-waged. But there's currently three strands, if you like, in dealing with the issue of unemployment and low-level, minimum wage employment, if you like, or low contracts. And the way I see it, it divides up into, there's the minimum wage, which is low and difficult to live on. There's the living wage, which I know some organisations take up and is somewhat higher than the minimum wage, in as much as it should. If you work for a living, you should be able to live on what you earn. And there's a growing clamour, or a very distant clamour, if you like, for the idea of the wage, the universal income. And these three strands all operate. Minimum wage, we all know about. The other two elements, would either of you like to comment on that?
Yeah, maybe just a couple of points on it, Maurice. One is we'd be very strong advocates for the living wage as an organisation as well, and to commend organisations.
Can you just explain a little bit for the listeners?
Yeah, the difference between them. So, as you said, the minimum wage is the wage that's laid down in legislation, beyond which, you know, and again, subject to certain caveats in terms of people age and so on, beyond which, in most cases, it's not legal to pay people for less than such a, as I say, depending on age, less than a certain amount per hour.
The living Any idea what that is at the moment? Is it around €10, €25, something like that?
It would be in and around that, Maurice. That wouldn't probably be too far away.
Anyway. Not more than 11.
Yeah, whereas the living wage is usually around €2 per hour mark, give or take, again, without being exact with it, above that. And so just that difference between the living wage becoming a sort of a minimum wage, or, and again, if you come back to the living wage, what's really, I suppose, you know, maybe more important about that is it's linked to very, very strong evidence on what it actually costs people to live. And I'd give maybe a mention to the organisation, the Vincentian Partnership for Social Justice, and their website, budgeting.ie. They do fantastic work on the minimum essential standards of living. So they look at a whole range of circumstances, people who live on their own, people who live in urban areas, rural areas, family size, and they look at what's needed in each of those circumstances for people to live on. And the living wages pretty much relates to comes out of that, or relates to that work, doesn't come out of that work.
But. Yeah. Well, the living wage, I mean, when you say, oh, it's only €2 more than the minimum, doesn't sound a great deal. But when you spin it out, that's up to like 80 to 100 quid a week on top of what a minimum wage earner would be on. So it's a substantial amount of money, certainly for someone who's working hard.
It is indeed, Maurice. And the other part too, and look, one of the things we'd say to listeners, or if it's themselves or family members or friends, and maybe they were looking at taking up work and that, you know, to really check it out. There are a range of incentives as well in terms of taking up work that can really make the difference and make it worthwhile as well. And similarly for people to check, you know, will I lose anything too? So it's one thing we'd always say to people, you know, check it out fully when you're being offered that. I know it's something that, in terms of the service for ourselves, there's been cases where people have contacted us around a different query, but when the information officers have talked to them, they might have said, well, I didn't take up that job because it didn't pay. And then they hadn't realised that because maybe their own family, they'd be entitled to work and family payment and the back to work family dividend, to get both together would have made all the difference. So we'd always say that to people. You might have a sense that this wouldn't be worthwhile financially, but we'd really encourage people to check it out, you know, either contact ourselves or a whole range of different, you know, local citizen information service.
I've had some experience of that myself, where I've been advising a client. And in fact, using your book, your little Bible there, realised that the person would be better off. The guy had a number of children and he had been offered a job, but it was only about 10 quid a week more than he was getting. He didn't realise that if he took it on, he would get the supplements as well. And it actually nearly doubled his weekly income. And in the end, I've seen him a few times since, and he's delighted with himself, actually. But just didn't know. Just thought, oh, I'm not working all week for 10 quid. What's the point?
Just to say as well that most people have concerns about losing things. And one of the biggest things they're concerned about losing is the medical card.
Yeah.
And if somebody is returning to work, they can keep their medical card for up to 2 years while they're engaging in work coming from unemployment. So there's that safety net there that you don't have to be concerned about doctor's visits and medication and costs. That is built into returning to work. So people are concerned. And as John said, it's very important that they identify everything that they've got to see, will they keep it? Will it improve? And what else is there that they can benefit from? Because that's why the system is there. There are a range of supports and they are there available to the person to take advantage of. There sometimes is a gap between it being there and accessing it or being informed about how to access it. And that's where service providers come in. We have an idea of what's available, how you access it, and what you need is somebody to help you through the process from application to qualification. And that's part of the work we do.
I'm just thinking about the publicity and the public recognition of the INOU and how people get to know about it, where they hear about it. I've been unemployed and for periods of up to a year and not heard of it until I was actually working and then was linked into it through other services. In terms of publicity, is there a regular outlet that you have that you go to?
Just to say, we regularly do an analysis of where our clients come from, how they get to us. And we've been extremely fortunate that one of the biggest sources of traffic and income from people is the internet. So people will not necessarily search for an organisation. They'll search for information on a topic. You know, going back to work, taking up education, working family payment, back to work family dividend. And we do rank very well for that. So we get a lot of traffic through that. But we also get a lot of word of mouth traffic. So we would deal with somebody and they would get a successful outcome or an outcome they're happy with. And then they would tell their friend, who tells a neighbour, who tells a cousin, who tells the person who goes. So the word of mouth is very strong. And as John said, with individual members, we have a lot of active individual members who hear about things from family, friends, neighbours, and they directly say to people, contact the INOU. There's somebody there who can provide you with the assistance and the information you're looking for, and it's free and it's confidential. So we have a myriad of routes that come directly through to us. We also get a lot of referrals from organisations and groups. So that would include employability, jobs clubs, citizens information. And on occasion, we do have referral from official sources, such as people who've been in touch with social welfare or revenue or other state agencies who, doing the best they can, would say, we're not sure, we don't know, but we do know somebody who might. Give these people a call and see what they can do for you.
Question comprehensively answered. I'm going to just ask then, as well as a change in the payment system that recognises the changes in the work, is there a need for a changing in the way that people are being trained for work and the training, that, say, different kinds of upskilling, different technologies that people need to get hold of?
I think, to be honest with you, we may need to look at moving away from the model of fitting people into slots and developing training and providing training around ensuring that people are skilled to move into a variety of different types of jobs. Because saying that we will train somebody to do a particular job in a particular place, a particular way, that's not necessarily the case any longer. There's information technology, there's multi-skilling, there's people working from home. So we have to take a step back and say the old way of training and engaging with people won't necessarily work going forward. So we need better models of practice. We need better models to work around to ensure that this person can move, because part of the ethos of the organisation is making work pay is an important part and an important element. There's also a recognition that in the past there's been a structure where people come in at a certain point, but they then have an opportunity to progress and develop, move up the ladder, increase their skills, increase their quality of work, increase their seniority, make more money. Then they leave a space further on down for the next person to come along. So we may have situations where that may change and people will move sideways from one job to another. So we have to provide the training to ensure that they have the opportunity to move laterally between different categories, different types of jobs, without specifically training them for one thing, which means that if that one thing goes, then they have no other skills base to work from.
Absolutely, I agree 100% there. Time has marched on and we are at the end of the session, really. Thanks very much for coming in. It's been really interesting and I think quite fun, actually, as well. So perhaps I'll just get one of you to perhaps just give us contact details, if anyone, perhaps John, have you
got
something
written
down?
That's great. Yeah, I do indeed. So we'd say, so the website, we'd say, Maurice Hooken, always a great way to get in contact. It's www.inou.ie. And so that's the organisation of the unemployed. And there's a range of information on that that's really useful as well, including, I mentioned, the Working for Workbook earlier. And if people would like to join up as members, it's free for unemployed people. We'd be very much appreciate that. And the phone number is 01-856-0088.
Okay, thanks very much. Well, thanks again for coming in, guys.
Thanks very much, Mark.
Perhaps we'll have the opportunity to do it again in a future series if we put one together.
That's great. Thanks very much.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to Employability Radio. If you want to contact Employability Dublin North, call 01 844 2700 during office hours or see their Facebook page. For information on your local employability service providers, contact your local Intreo office for further information and referrals. The producer of Employability Radio was Maurice Newman. Sound engineer was Paul Walsh. If you missed any of the episodes in this series or want to listen to any of them again, all are available to playback as podcasts on the Near FM website. Just visit nearfm.ie/podcast and search for Employability Radio.